The White House makes a push for more foreign investment here in the United States.
But will that put a dent in the unemployment rate?
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. It's the Marketplace Midday Update, our podcast from Marketplace.org. Today is Tuesday, October 11th, Steve, which you know what that means?
It's 10-11.
It's 1 month away from 11-11-11, which I don't know what that's going to be about,
goodness.
But sounds good to me.
Well, that's nice. We'll be preparing for that
okay.
While we tell you the news of the day. Coming up, the health of the world economy this morning is in the hands of Slovakia.
How much do corporate earnings really matter?
And a dress, Jeremy, that won't curdle or expire. We'll tell you what it's made out of.
Those stories and more just ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Vast Conference, conference calls that give you clarity, professionalism, and flexibility all at a low price. For two Vast Conference calls free with no commitment, go to vastconference.com, promo code Marketplace.
Today, President Obama will be in Pittsburgh, pushing again for Congress to pass his $447 billion job creation bill. The chances of that happening are slim. Mm. So the president is also laying out a series of policies to boost foreign investment in the United States to the tune of $1 trillion, as Marketplace's David Gura reports.
This is no small goal. Nancy McClernand heads the Organization for International Investment. She represents U.S. subsidiaries of foreign companies.
They're going to have to work to achieve it.
In 1991, the U.S. attracted more than 40% of all foreign direct investment. Today, it's about half that. And the reason? According to some economists, it's because of surging growth in emerging markets, crumbling U.S. infrastructure, and an education system that can't compete. Still, there is a reason to invest here.
It's having low-cost access to the U.S. market.
Gordon Hansen teaches economics at UC San Diego. He says foreign businesses open shop in the U.S. to be closer to their customers, and upstart companies in emerging markets will want to expand.
They're going to want to have presence in other markets, and the U.S. is a place you just have to be.
But the Obama administration can only do so much. One big barrier to foreign investment, the corporate tax code, can't be changed without Congress. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
Well, Gus Fauché is director of macroeconomics at Moody's Analytics, and he's going to give us a little analysis on the jobs plan and particularly foreign investment. Morning, Gus.
Good morning.
When it comes to creating jobs, I mean, is the plan of trying to attract foreign direct investment, is that a good start, do you think?
It's a start. I think foreign direct investment is better for long-run job growth. It takes a long time for international firms to make business decisions. And so if we attract more foreign capital into the U.S., that will boost job growth over the longer run. But it isn't going to do much for the short-run jobs picture.
What about changes to tax policies? Is that going to help?
There are changes to the tax code that could help. For example, I think the president's call for extending the Social Security payroll tax cut and actually expanding it for 2012, I think that would be a smart move. That would put more money into consumers' pockets. He's talked about changes on the employer side as well, and that could help boost hiring. So I think in the short run, those types of changes are more effective in boosting job gains.
What about things outside of government action?
Well, I think right now the big holdup is business confidence. Businesses are hiring. We saw that in the September jobs numbers, which were okay but not great. But businesses are anxious right now, and until they're convinced that the recovery is going to continue and is going to solidify, I think they're going to be reluctant to hire.
Gus Fauché with Moody's Analytics. Gus, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, protests continue today, Steve, down on Wall Street and elsewhere over big compensation and little financial oversight. But it turns out things might not be looking so good for those who work in those very financial firms. There's a report this morning from the state of New York that is predicting big job losses and lower pay on Wall Street. Marketplace's Elisa Roth reports.
The report says the securities industry in New York could lose as many as 10,000 jobs by the end of next year. A lot of banks have been talking about layoffs. Goldman says it could cut 1,000 jobs plus. Credit Suisse and Barclays have both announced layoffs, though they haven't given numbers. Danny Sarch runs an executive search firm for the financial services industry, and he says everybody's worried about the economy and the regulatory environment. But that doesn't mean every company is laying people off.
We're saying Wall Street in the most general terms, which include investment banks and commercial banks. And essentially, even though it's the world sees it as one industry, it's really lots of mini industries.
The report also says bonuses will probably be smaller this year. The job cuts and smaller bonuses could have implications well beyond Wall Street. Both New York City and New York State depend heavily on the securities industry for tax revenue. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Well, today is the start of corporate earnings season here in the United States. We're going to hear first, as we always do, from the aluminum or aluminium company, Jeremy. Mr. I'm just back from London. Alcoa will
That's
have
right.
their numbers out later after the bell.
That's right. And they may give us some kind of a preview of what corporate America looks like, at least what it did look like in the last quarter. And some analysts are expecting that it might not look as great as it has in previous quarters. Here to talk about corporate earnings season with us is Julie Nieman, analyst with Smith Moore & Company, who is with us from St. Louis, as she is every Tuesday. Good morning.
Morning, Jeremy.
So, Julie, are you expecting a less-than-stellar corporate earnings season?
Now, overall, it should be pretty good. It's going to be a little mixed in some areas. Profit margins are excellent. A lot of cost-cutting. We've got stock repurchases. Companies are sitting on hoards of cash here. Except, for, of course, for the financials. You've got a continuing stream of bad news for the banksters, bad mortgages, bad debt, trading profits. A lot of mixed signals, though, because what we're looking at is a lot of the metals are starting to drop off here. Over the last 2 months, we had a big drop in prices due to faltering demand. China is slowing down, and they're no longer stockpiling metals.
Right.
And here in the United States, we've got a big surge in automotive demand, but that's pretty much over. Leases are up. They need new cars. Old cars, repairs too high. That all helped, but now we're looking at a real fall off in demand here.
Well, Julie, but as we hear about corporate profits doing okay, you got to think that over the last several quarters, as they've done well, it hasn't really trickled down in the form of jobs. How much do corporate earnings really matter?
Well, they matter to shareholders, indirectly for your 401k investments and pensions or what's left up for it. But for the average American, the corporate good news really isn't having any impact on them. They're not expanding. They're not hiring. What hiring they're doing is very, very modest. Here in St. Louis, we got the good news that Emerald Automotive is taking over an old Ford assembly plant. They're going to be manufacturing new electric mail vans, and they'll be sold in Europe. But the job postings? 11 jobs. So even the expansion that you're seeing is very, very modest. So corporations are doing very well. It just isn't trickling down to the rest of us.
Julie Nieman, analyst with Smith Moore & Company. Thanks as always.
You bet.
Well, you can check out the numbers anytime at our website, marketplace.org. Follow us on Twitter at Marketplace Radio. I'm at Radio Chio.
And I am at Jeremy Hobson.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Vast Conference, the service that gives clarity, professionalism, and flexibility for conference calls at a low price. Vast provides both regular and toll-free numbers so you can set up calls anytime and provides web tools to manage or record calls instantly. Priced at 2.5 cents per minute with no commitments or contracts, try Vast Conference with two free calls at vastconference.com, promo code Marketplace. That's vastconference.com, promo code Marketplace.
This morning in the Marketplace Global Perspective, there's an important vote today in Slovakia on the size of the Euro Currency Fund, which would help bail out neighboring European countries. Well, there's no guarantee Slovakia will vote in favor of expanding the fund because of infighting between parties in the parliament. The BBC's Bethany Bell is in the Slovakian capital, Bratislava. She's with us now to talk about it. Hi, Bethany.
Hi.
We've just heard that the junior partner and Slovakia's coalition government has said it's going to abstain from the vote today. What does that mean?
Well, it means that the outcome of the bailout fund is in doubt at the moment. For the Slovakian leader, it means it could spell the end of her governing coalition because she will not have enough votes to get this key vote through on the bailout fund.
How crucial, Bethany, is this vote in Slovakia to the Eurozone bailout plan?
Well, all of the Eurozone members have to vote in favor of this bailout plan. Now, the only country that has not done it is Slovakia. It's the last one, and it's crucial that it does if the bailout fund is to go ahead.
How popular is the idea of a Eurozone bailout in Slovakia?
Well, a lot of Slovaks say we are the second poorest country in the Eurozone. We saved and scrimped for years and years to try and be a member of the Euro. And now we're being expected to bail out countries which are richer than we are. It's not fair. Other people are saying Slovakia benefited a great deal from the EU. And if the European economy starts going downhill, it will take Slovakia with it.
The BBC's Bethany Bell in Bratislava. Bethany, thank you.
Thank you.
The video game chipmaker NVIDIA says it's going to team up with Oak Ridge National Laboratory to build the world's fastest supercomputer. Marketplace's Steve Henn reports the chips that make the supercomputer possible are actually subsidized by the booming free market in video games.
I'm watching a scene from the video game Battlefield 3, U.S. troops under attack.
Gun! Sniper!
It looks so real, I could be watching the news. And special graphics chips make this possible. It turns out those chips can also turbocharge supercomputers. Sumit Gupta is with NVIDIA.
The mass market video game market is allowing us to use the same graphics chips for high-performance computing.
High-performance chips can cost $1 billion to design. Too much for researchers. But Steve Scott at NVIDIA says video games are gold mines. Designing chips for gamers pays. And now scientists are building on top of those chips.
There's an amazing transformation taking place right now.
Titan will be blazing fast, capable of doing 20 million billion math problems a second. Scientists will use it to model new drugs, understand the origins of the universe, and attempt to predict climate change. None of it would be possible without games. So go ahead, play. Help save the world. In Silicon Valley, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
And now to Marketplace Sports.
Steve, we don't have a theme song yet.
Oh.
I think our theme song department got laid off in the recession.
Someone get BJ Lederman on the phone. We need a sports theme. Of course, you've probably, I know you've heard, because you love the NBA and basketball, Jeremy.
Yep.
The NBA is canceling the first 2 weeks of the season.
Indeed.
After players and owners failed to reach a new labor agreement. And Commissioner David Stern says more games could be canceled because negotiations aren't going anywhere right now.
I think it's fair to say that we establish the positions of the parties with complete certainty of where each stood, and we remain really very, very far apart on virtually all issues.
Well, the NBA news is not going to go down well among NBA fans in this country, and it's already not going down well among NBA fans in China, where the NBA is quite popular. And it's where we find our China Bureau Chief, Rob Schmitz, who joins us now. Good morning, Rob.
Hey, Jeremy.
So, first of all, it sounds like some of these NBA players who are not going to be able to play for the first 2 weeks of the season are going to be spending a little quality time in China.
Yeah, that's right. If you're a Denver Nuggets fan, you've just lost three players to China. Wilson Chandler, J.R. Smith and Kenyon Martin all signed deals with Chinese teams. I know you're on Twitter, Jeremy. Make sure to check out the Twitter feed for Wilson Chandler, who's playing for a team in the city of Hangzhou.
Okay.
It's just this hilarious feed of his first impressions of living in China. He was complaining about not having Facebook the other day. But apart from the entertainment value, this is evidence that the Chinese league is one to be reckoned with. It can now afford to pay players millions of dollars. It's poaching NBA players, and it's making the viewing experience for Chinese fans much better.
Okay, so some players are going to be doing a little work in China to make up for this. But what about the fans over there? I know there's a big fan base for the NBA in China.
Yeah, there is. And I think a lot of fans are disappointed. One fan blogged that the entire NBA should just move to China to avoid the standstill. But, you know, other fans have said they're just going to watch the Chinese league. Yao Ming's not playing anymore. He actually owns the Shanghai Sharks team. So why not? And who knows? Maybe this big China market the NBA is after will get hooked on their own league.
Marketplace's Rob Schmitz in Shanghai, where the news has already gotten out about the NBA cancellation of the first 2 weeks of the season. We'll see, Rob, as people start to wake up in this country, how the reaction is over here. Thanks so much for talking with us.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Well, there could be a $20 billion foreclosure settlement in the works between state attorneys general, the Justice Department, and some of the nation's biggest banks. Fox Business reports there could be a possible deal, by early next week over improper mortgage practices. Meanwhile, there's a still-to-be-resolved question of whether home buyers suffered any financial harm. But surveys show other types of harm as well that those home buyers and homeowners have suffered. Marketplace Economy 4.0 special correspondent David Brancaccio is with us now to talk about that. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Steve.
So to understand the real costs, we have to measure the right things. Like, what are we talking about?
Well, Steve, you've seen the HBO series, The Wire, about
Sure.
Baltimore, right?
Yeah.
That show makes it clear vacant houses breed crime. So it's not just the family in the home getting hurt or the bank itself. It's the wider neighborhood. Well, academics set out to measure this if they could. Dan Immergluck, a professor of city and regional planning at Georgia Tech, was one of those researchers. What he found was a big bump in foreclosures caused a big bump in violent crime.
Once you get one or two or three foreclosures on a block, you start really creating all kinds of negative spillover effects on the neighborhood, and crime is just one of those.
Well, what are these other so-called spillover effects of foreclosures?
Well, it's still a fairly new area of research, but one area that's been getting attention recently is health. The National Bureau of Economic Research has a paper suggesting when there are more foreclosures, there are more hospital visits. Janet Curry, an economist at Princeton, is one of the authors.
One of the biggest effects was mental health with anxiety or also suicide attempts.
Especially horrible was an increase in suicide attempts. 100 more foreclosures in a given zip code equaled about a 30% increase in attempted suicides.
So we've got more illness and we've got more crimes. What does this mean for policy?
Well, this could give ammunition to people like, for instance, Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke, who just the other day said the Fed will do what it can to nurse the economy back to health, but that it would help if Congress came up with what he called a path to the future on, in fact, foreclosures. It's clear that even if our house is okay and we pay our mortgage on time, we're still paying for the foreclosure crisis in crime, health care costs, and other expensive ways.
Marketplace's David Brancaccio. David, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And now, Steve, to Lexington, Kentucky, which Men's Health magazine called the least active city in America. Well, apparently Lexington is also a place with a very good sense of humor. Over the weekend, the city held what it called a sedentary parade. Mayor Jim Gray was...
Is it, a parade that just didn't move?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if they were driving
there.
Very fast.
Everybody else was
down Main Street. But Mayor Jim Gray was on the lead float, and he was sitting on a couch with his feet propped up on the table.
That's awesome.
Well, tomorrow the federal government releases its projections for how much heating fuels will cost this winter. This is something that's going to be paid very close attention to in places like New Hampshire that have long, cold winters.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Congress is considering scaling back a program that provides heating assistance to the poor. And as Dan Gorenstein reports now from New Hampshire Public Radio, the Granite State is bracing for the cuts.
Congress is poised to cut as much as $1 billion from the program this year, leaving about 2 million households without aid. The reduction would come at a time when home heating oil is 80 cents a gallon more than a year ago. Joanne Morin runs the Energy Assistance Program in New Hampshire. She says her office could end up serving 5,000 to 10,000 fewer families.
There's a lot of strain on households and families in New Hampshire right now.
Abby, come here. A treat.
80-year-old Jean McElligott, her husband John, and their dog Abby live in a simple five-room ranch. The couple received a letter. Given the likely cuts, their monthly income of $2,696 is a few hundred too much to get help this year. The problem for the McElligotts is...
John Hancock is $107. Electric is $74.76. The house insurance, which is $105.60.
Everything is up, except the pension money they live on. Jean says friends have suggested one way to cut back.
People say to me, why do you keep the dog? Well, you have a dog for 9 years and you love her.
As for John McElligott, the World War II veteran finds himself wondering about snowstorms and whether he can afford to fix his roof come spring. In Concord, New Hampshire, I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
The uncertainty of the markets has everyone reeling, from politicians to economists to plain old financial civilians, if you will. But what do investment bankers do in the face of the unknown? According to one reporter, go to their psychic.
Well, here to talk to us in today's Midday Extra about the current clientele frequenting New York's psychic dens is reporter Diana Speckler, who wrote the story for New York Magazine. She joins us now. Hi, Diana. So how did you learn about these Wall Street types frequenting psychics?
I had read a book about Frank Andrews some years ago, who is one of New York City's most famous psychics. And I called him just because I was thinking of writing a story about him, although I wasn't sure about my angle. And we were talking, and he said, you know, what's really interesting, I used to only see women. You know, he's been a psychic for forever. I mean, he used to be John Lennon's psychic. He's in his 70s now. He said, I used to see only women, and then later I saw, you know, in the 70s and 80s, I saw gay men, and then later it was more of a mix. But in the past few years, for the first time ever, I'm seeing mostly men, and they're Wall Street guys. I was really interested in this, and I wondered if it was just him or if it was a phenomenon. So I started calling around to psychics in New York City. I mean, there's no shortage of psychics in this city. And I asked them, have you noticed a shift in your clientele? And all of them said yes. They said in the last few years, some of them said even in the last couple of weeks, there's been more of an increase, which makes sense. And they come discreetly. They don't want anyone to know, but they're asking for predictions.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, what kind of questions are they asking? They want predictions? What else are they talking about?
I mean, there's a whole range, but they want predictions about the market. Some of them just want to know, are we going to be able to keep our jobs? They're all afraid of losing their shirts ever since the economy tanked. And, you know, again, it's been for the last few years, but particularly recently.
Did you get any sense of what kind of answers they're getting?
Well, I mean, I think that depends on the psychic, but as I said in the story, one of them told me that she says to them, you have to be very careful. I think it's, you know, what seems to be, what was sort of interesting to me is that a lot of the psychics seem to be telling their clients things that almost anyone could tell them based on, you know, just reading the newspaper. Things aren't looking good. You have to be really careful with your money, you know, things like that. It's hard to say which ones are psychic predictions and which ones are just sort of educated guesses.
I see you drinking some coffee in the future.
Probably going to be taking a taxi, maybe a black car to the airport.
Right.
Has business, Diana, picked up for psychics overall, or have they been hit by the recession like everybody else?
You know, you'd think they would be hit by the recession like everyone else, but psychics actually always do well during recessions. And I think that what's interesting these days is that perhaps the clients that they normally have dropped off. You know, people don't have as much expendable income, so the women who were normally coming to them asking about their love lives maybe aren't coming in as frequently, but they've been replaced by these Wall Street men.
Wow.
Reporter Diana Speckler, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Diana.
Thanks for having me.
And finally, a German designer and microbiologist, Jeremy, has come up with a fabric made from the high concentrations of casein, which is found in milk. Clothes made with the fabric, which has a texture similar to silk, will be sold under the designer's Mademoiselle Chi-Chi label. that's the label, is the Mademoiselle Chi-Chi. Milk fabrics have been around for a long time. I didn't know this. They've been around since like the 1930s.
We've been making
fabrics out of milk.
It's not a Lady Gaga invention or anything.
No,
like
this
that.
Is not anything that
not a meat
just
dress.
Popped up, right? Right. But in order to be made, the milk had to be mixed with a lot of chemicals, and that made it, of course, bad for the environment and bad for people too. Mm-hmm. The new version doesn't include any chemicals. It just takes a couple of gallons of milk to make an entire dress. The good news, of course, is that there's no expiration date.
It won't start smelling awful like milk if you leave it around for too long.
No, no.
In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
I'm Steve Chiatakis. Enjoy your Tuesday. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.